Everybody come up the front, if you will, please. I know it's awful, but... Well, I'll tell you why I do that, too. That there is... The only thing worse than me sitting here and just talking on and on for 30 minutes or an hour or whatever would be having to listen to me talk on and on for 30 minutes or an hour or so. So instead of a very formal presentation or instead of me giving a speech or a lecture on spam, I would really, really, really rather have a conversation, and just like we were talking right now. And also, one of the cardinal rules of speaking is to know your audience. And so I'll start off after the introductions are done, whatever. I want to find out who y'all are and why y'all are here, so that I make sure that I talk about what you want to hear, because it's a pretty broad topic and it's one that is near and dear to my heart and my wallet too, I guess. Scott, do you want to? I'm Pete Wellborn. Okay. I'm an attorney here in Atlanta. I've got my own law firm, actually with a new partner as of a couple months ago, Wellborn and Butler. I've been at three or four of the biggest firms in town over the past, time's flying, 13 years of practicing law. For the past 7 or 8 years, my primary practice focus has been on internet law, and a large portion of that has been unsolicited commercial email spamming and spoofing. I've represented Earthlink for 6 or 7 years now. Represent a number of other software companies, ISPs, industry companies, non-technology companies who have internet needs. You know, I like to tell my clients, if you have a computer or if you have an email address, then you have technology law needs, and that's especially true nowadays. Why are y'all here? Why don't we go? I know if you hate this, I'm sorry, but it really helps get things going and helps me tailor the conversations.
Hi, I'm Tom Porter from Wisconsin. I'm interested in the issue of how to deal with spam and keep it away, or how to deal with it is what I'm mainly interested in.
From what aspect? Personal aspect?
Personal aspect, yeah. Getting about more than 75% of my email is now spam. So, yeah. But I've had the same internet address for a long time. Well over 6 years, so that's probably had a lot to do with it.
I'm Robert Burry. I'm a student over at Georgia Tech, and about 90% of my daily email is spam. I get about 70-75 messages a day, so it's just, like, ridiculous. I'm trying to get emails from my teachers, and they get caught up in my spam filter, so it's kind of hard on me. Just, okay, let's go through.
That's that professor who emails you about the Viagra?
No, marketing research, actually, on other stuff.
Hi, I'm Sybil, and I'm here from Atlanta. I was just wondering how the spam operators even get my email address. Forget about the filters. I just accept it now.
I'm Kim. I'm from South Georgia. Like they've been saying, a good percentage of my email is spam. And I have to go through the junk filter to catch regular stuff that gets filtered there. So, and I'm tired of, solicitations for how to enlarge my penis size. any enlargement would be too much. So,
I thought maybe they knew something about me because I was getting a lot of those for a while. Where in South Georgia are you from? Okay. I'm from Macon. So.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Hi, I'm Sam Curry. No, sorry. Just kidding.
for those of y'all who don't know, that's a great joke.
I'm Wayne Aiken. I'm from Raleigh, and I've declared war on these people. Well, literally.
What all are you doing?
Everything I possibly can. I in my office, I have a little blackboard where I keep a little black marks of the number of websites I've been able to get pulled from the web, the number of accounts I've been able to get canceled.
Like the little flags they had on the
like they put on the side of the B-52s.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
notches
exactly.
Hi, I'm Joanna. I'm from Washington, D.C., and I'm a student. And I use a Yahoo account for my primary email account. And a few months ago, I signed up for an EasyBoard account, and my spam count at least tripled. And, yeah.
My name is Jeff. I'm from Michigan. I do computer support for a lot of small businesses in my area, and one of the big things that a lot of people are talking about now is junk mail and how to deal with it.
My name is Mary. I'm from Tallahassee. I work for the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and their Computer Crime Center, and I'm interested in what you have to say about the legal aspects of spam. Also, if you have any tips about getting rid of it, because we get a lot of calls every day about spam, and all we can say is, I'm sorry, it's not illegal.
But it is. Okay. We'll talk about that.
Jeff Jones, Atlanta, weather.com. The thing that strikes me most is that I don't put my work email address out on the net very often. It's only showed up out there once or twice. I get 70% spam at work, never mind what I get on my personal address.
Without saying the domain, or how many letters are in your before the at in your work address? Is it like first name dot last name, or just first initial last name, or
first initial, middle initial, last name?
Okay, we'll talk about that too then.
Name's Kevin from Jacksonville, Florida. Just here to get the legal aspects of what can be done to fight back. Really, that's it.
Rick Ostepower from here in Atlanta. Porn, basically. Porn email, constant.
How to get more
never
of
ending.
Or how to stop it. Which one do you want?
Yeah. Basically, that's it.
I'm with him, and it's the same thing. The porn email is just getting ridiculous. Even just in the last 3 months, it seems like it's increased on my Yahoo account, and I never used to get it.
Hi, I'm Laura. We're from Tampa. This is Leo. And we work for a marketing company that is starting to get into email marketing, and we're trying to be the sane voices that are telling them what not to do and stay away from these lists that they're buying.
I'm also in marketing, but we don't buy lists ever. The users have to opt in, and it's very easy for them to opt out. The filters are becoming a real problem for us. A lot of the emails we do are bank-related. We mask the accounts. And, of course, the programmers used X's. So it's got, you know, seven X's and three numbers in the email. So, of course, every filter in the world filters it, and the customers complain that they didn't receive, an email. And that's a compliance issue for the banks.
Do you mind saying which marketing company in Tampa, instead of curiosity?
Here 360. We don't do, spamming right
no,
now.
No, I was just wondering, because there was a very similar sounding company that was down in that area, mm-hmm. that I was going round and round with about whether their 20 million email list they purchased was actually opt-in. Mm-hmm. Y'all might not know this, but you can actually buy – you know, opt-in lists of all 300 million internet users who've specifically agreed to receive your emails about the porn and the Viagra and all, which is ludicrous.
Yeah, right. Delivers things to my house.
Exactly.
Hey, I'm Tom. I'm a student. I'm getting sick of all this spam. I need my email address for school. I'm just here to get some tips on how I can prevent or stop this.
Where you go to school?
Chattahoochee Tech. It's over in Marietta.
Yeah.
My name's James, and I work for a small company that sells police equipment here in the local area. And the strangest thing is I've got a Hotmail account that I only use to talk between myself and my other store, and I'm getting spam on that, too.
Although that's actually not that strange. Other ways, too, though.
Well, I'm here because it's the same thing everybody else, you don't want spam on every account and having to change every 2 seconds. Then you have to tell everybody what the new address is to get away from it, and it finds you anyway.
I'm Matt, and I just have recently come up with a problem where my account on Bell South has been co-opted by a spammer, and I am getting returns. It only goes to Hotmail accounts, but it appears that I am the spammer.
What kind of spam is it?
It's an offer to make $500 a week using your PC at home, and I only get returned mail from Hotmail. So only the undeliverables come back to me.
Did he hack you or just spoof your address?
I do not know.
I would guess it just spoof. If you want to shoot me an email with a copy of a bounce back, okay. I'd be interested to see that.
I'm Judy, and I have had the same problem that he's had. Somebody co-opted my account, and I get megabytes worth of returned mail. That happened, and they just used it for 3 or 4 days and then moved on to a new account, I guess. But I got numerous megabyte messages of returned address stuff. And besides that, I'm drowning in spam anyway. I get hundreds within a week. Mm. Because I've had the same email address forever, and I really hate to give it up.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's like your phone number. It's like if you had to change your phone number every month or two because of unsolicited telephone calls. Thank you all for indulging me on that. One last ground rule, too. This is not grade school, so you don't even have to raise your hand. I will specifically ask you all not to hold your questions till the end. If you want to interrupt, just holler out. Because I really want to talk about what y'all want to hear about, and I want to answer your questions. And like I said, I really enjoy it a whole lot more if we have a conversation as opposed to me up here talking like it's a lecture in college where everybody keeps their mouth shut and I just drone on and on and on in some monotone voice. But it's not going to be as exciting as I thought it was going to be. I just knew we would have, even our marketers over here want to do it responsibly and, true opt-in and be the voice of sanity. Most of y'all have the same problem that I do and everybody else does, which is, as the cliche goes, drowning in a sea of spam. I just knew we were going to have somebody here who wanted to argue First Amendments or wanted to argue why spam was an American right.
Yeah. I'm Scott, and I'm just a yeah. So what's the big deal here? can't you just delete a few unnecessary emails?
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Start off with a couple of statistics. Between September 2001 and this month, spam has, depending on whose statistic you look at, either doubled, tripled, or quadrupled. So think about that. In the life of the Internet, we're talking less than a year, it's increased by some factor of double, triple, quadruple. Less than 5% of the people on the Internet say they like it or enjoy it, and I'm guessing those are the reclusive shut-ins who, that's like getting a letter from their family when they get the, send $5 to the top name on this list and put your name there too, and they're, oh, they love me. 85% of the people hate spam. They hate it. As far as costs go, 10% of the overhead of a given ISP, in rough numbers, goes specifically to combat spam. If spam were done away with, the lowest numbers you see is that are that you could take 10 to 15, 20% off of the cost of your internet connectivity in any given month. I think it's more like half. The $20 a month accounts would jump down to 10 if we could wave a magic wand and completely do away with spam. Y'all all talked about the hassle of having to read, depending on which one of y'all was talking, 3 or 4 emails a day, 10 or 15 emails a day, 20 or 25 emails a day. Those of you who are students talked about having to, especially on the college campuses, with your student address, go through a lot of emails just to sort the porno ads from legitimate messages from your professor. A lot of us are here because that is a hassle. It disturbs us personally. It takes away from our time. You have to put a dollar value on that, too, because if you're an employer, think about if it's at work and it's your employee having to sort through that as opposed to you being on your own time at home after dinner looking to see if anybody in your family sent you the pictures from the reunion or whatever. And the dollar losses to U.S. companies from spam are staggering. If you assume a $50,000 a year employee who spends, say, on average 30 seconds per spam, deleting it, reading it, making sure it's not something that he needs to see, deleting it, and the most conservative figures, and I think these are way low, say that each of the estimated 150 million Internet users in the U.S. By 2006 is going to be receiving 1,500 emails a year. which is 250 workdays, something like that, 260 workdays, ends up being $300 per employee. And that's just lost productivity. That's about 30 cents a word, 30 cents per email. Some figures go as high as $1 an email in lost worker productivity. So it's bad enough as it is, but then when you multiply that out, you know, assume a 1,000 employee company. We're talking about, depending on whose numbers you believe, $300,000 to $1 million out of pocket in lost worker productivity just because they're having to delete these darn ads. From the ISP's point of view, in real rough numbers, it costs them, counting legal fees, counting loss of goodwill and reputation, counting the churn that results, and anywhere from 10 to 20% of churn of swapping from one ISP to another is going to be due to spam. Jupiter Media did a survey of internet users, and the numbers were staggering. Something like 40 to 50% of internet users would change ISPs if the new ISP could guarantee a significant reduction in spam. So it's a problem as far as hassle. It's a problem in that it detracts from the time we have to go about our life, but it's also a staggering problem dollar-wise. Spam, what is spam? Somebody, I'll throw that question out there. What is spam?
Unsolicited advertising.
Unsolicited commercial email. See, I wish there was one bad guy here that we could pick on, because I usually will get an argument now about, you know, no, spam is unsolicited bulk email. You know, that there's some imaginary line in the sand, some number that if they only send out 500 or 1,000 or 5,000 targeted emails, well, that's not bulk. You know, that's not sending a million a day. So.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about unsolicited religious email too.
And that is a tricky issue because the law is real clear.
The key thing is unsolicited.
Well, it is, but it's not, because the First Amendment argument is a dead loser for commercial email. The resources of an ISP, your computer resources, are yours. It's the same laws that prohibit me from cutting across one of y'all's rose garden prohibit similarly the trespass upon the ISP's computer system, mail servers, upon your own computer system, servers, etc. However, in this country, going all the way back to the Revolutionary War, two of the most protected forms of speech, if you put commercial speech out here, which gets the least protection under the First Amendment, the other end of the spectrum is going to be political commentary, religious commentary. Those types of speech are protected at all costs. So it would be a much, much harder thing to win.
I don't think you can equate that. I might have to listen to your religious rant if you're on a soapbox on a street corner, but I don't have to invite you into my house. And I don't have to pay money as I do when, or my time and money like I do when I'm reading my email.
That's a good point.
I can't shut my door on my email.
Yeah, and I actually, in concept, I agree with y'all wholeheartedly. I really do. But the problem is that even though the courts have made clear in the commercial cases that the ISPs are, it's not the phones, that they are private, that the computers are privately owned resources as far as the mail servers and where the electronic trespass occurs. Even though they said that, there's still this whole idea that the internet is it's out there for the public. A lot of the access, a lot of the resource out there, it's a collection, a collaboration, and so it's the courts would not really accept the argument. With commercial cases, the classic comparison is, I could not break into one of your homes or walk into one of your offices, walk over to the fax machine, and use that to start faxing out my advertisements, because that fax machine is your property. I can't say free speech gives me the right to come do that. That won't fly. That argument flies great with the commercial speech, but it with the political and the religious commentary, the First Amendment arguments would be pretty compelling against it. I mean, I'm with you, and I would be arguing exactly what you are as hard as I could, but that's a much more uphill battle. But you know, as a practical matter, political commentary and religious commentary and non-commercial, unsolicited commercial email, from my experience, probably accounts for 0.00001%.
Wait till November. Election time.
Well, and but I think we'll see a self-limiting factor on that, because the hatred of spam is universal enough, and even the casual internet users hate it enough that by the time they get their third, you know, vote for John Doe for representative email that they're sick of seeing, it's going to be a backlash.
If I'm John Doe's opponent, I'm going to start sending out vote for John Doe spam.
Yeah, yes, you are. And that's when John Doe hires me and you end up in jail. Yeah.
Just out of curiosity on the whole spam thing, how effective do you think the different RBLs are, NANI, the lumber cartel, things like that, how effective do you think they really are in fighting spam, especially the more rabid side of it?
Well, and the more rabid side is kind of scary. And
the ones that are null routing entire slash 24s, slash 8s that belong to these ISPs that they call spam houses.
Yeah, and God, I need an identical twin brother up here to do the point-counterpoint thing, like, the old Saturday Night Lives, Jane, you ignorant slut, you know, Dan Aykroyd, Jane Curtin, because I'm torn. I can really argue both sides of that. Those type services provide just an invaluable service overall. And does everybody know what he's talking about?
No.
Okay, the RBLs, they are organizations that maintain lists of the domains and IP addresses. Basically, it's a list of, if you don't like spam, what you ought to block from even getting to your servers. And so companies will subscribe to these lists, and if you're on that list, you're getting blocked by that company or blocked by that ISP or blocked by that domain owner. So in theory, it's great. If only the bad guys ended up on that list, that would be phenomenal. It'd be wonderful. But what you've seen more and more of is an innocent party ends up on the list, and by innocent, you know, I don't mean the grandma who didn't know spamming was bad. I literally mean an innocent party, somebody who's
email. Customer of the company that didn't actually spam.
Well, yeah, yeah, customer. Somebody who's
complained about SPUs and other things like that.
Yes, somebody whose email address got spoofed. A company that's doing, an ISP that's doing everything it possibly can. You know, it's going to be implementing port 25 blocking in 3 weeks, and it's moving heaven and earth to do that, but it just can't shut this guy down. It's got a lawsuit going on to find out who it is, but it can't get the guy shut down. In those instances, it starts to go from being a wonderful resource to being almost like a witch hunt, where the theory is a few of the innocent have to die to make sure we get the bad guys too. And so, actually, MAPS, one of the largest outfits that does that is MAPS, Mail Abuse Prevention System. They're the ones that run the RBL, Real-Time Black Hole List. And they've gotten hit with several lawsuits over the past 6 to 8 months by innocent companies who were, or entities that were put on the list that really were not culpable. And they didn't feel that MAPS responded quickly enough when they called and said, look, it's not us. And so they sued, and they actually got injunctions against MAPS. MAPS basically lost those cases. And like I said, I can argue both sides, because they provide just a very valuable function. It really does help with spam to have that list at your disposal, that, you know, the here's what we should be blocking list. I can tell you firsthand that even the worst career spammer, who's the baddest guy on the internet, is going to call him. It's gonna call and say, you know, it's not me, it's my customer. This, you know, these were opt in. I'm gonna, you know.
You can't block people though, because you can just sign up for a throwaway account and go through some like public server. Man, I've been getting spammed by AOL, mainly who does it. I mean, there's a lot of places. There's nothing you can do. They buy an account, they throw it away, and get a new IP. You really can't blacklist people.
Well, yeah, and that's actually what you're saying is especially profound, because here's what it points up. There will never be a 100% technological fix to combat spam. I mean, if you go all the way back to the very, very early days of filters, how did the first filters work? Like the first time somebody sat down and thought about it, first filters did what? Anybody? Bueller?
Filter stuff.
Filter stuff, very good. What did it filter?
Keywords.
Keywords. It looked in the subject line, and I mean, the first filter was probably about three lines of code that said rejected if it has XXX, make money, you know, or any one of these phrases in the subject line. So. Right. And working on what I'm sure y'all begin seeing, and it kills me because. Yeah, the whole idea, I talked about false positive. Some of you said that, you know, actually several of you said that with the filtering software that you use, while it does a great job, you still have to flip through what it captures, because there'll be the professor's message that got captured, or there could be the very important message from, you know, your best friend who also mentions that his Viagra is working great. That got put in there.
So you got to make laws for it then. In Georgia, it's still legal. I could
no,
go.
No, no.
Yes.
It is not.
What?
No. No.
Really?
Really.
How did they make it illegal? I didn't hear about that.
Well, that's one of the common misperceptions. And going back to the filter idea, and don't let remind me to jump right back to the laws and the illegality. But with the filters, how many of you get the spam now that says this? You missed our teleconference. In the subject line,
yeah,
right. Yeah, or I'm very sorry.
Well, it's not only that. A lot of these engines now will find your domain site on the web, and it will look for names of people from your company, and then it will send you
an email, you know, from the name and email address of someone at your company, and pull out words from your website saying, you know. You missed the call about this, but that's where it gets challenging for filters, you know.
Yeah, message-specific lines that force you to open it. And yeah, mm-hmm. And several of you ask, you know, how did they get my email? I don't use this much. The ones of you I really feel for, the ones who've had the same email address that's become a part of your identity as far as how people contact you and communicate with you. You know, same as the phone number I've had up here for 12 years, or the phone number that my family has had in Macon since it was whatever the exchange was, you know, Brookwood 359, for 40 or 50 years. You don't want to change, because that's, you know, people know how to get in touch with you that way. And once your address is out there, it's almost an unstoppable problem once you're on a list. Because it's like the old TV commercial with I'm probably dating myself here, with the girl that uses the great shampoo, and she says, I told two friends. The screen splits and doubled, and it says, and they told two friends, and there's four of them, and they told two friends, and it keeps on going. It's kind of the same thing with the email. Just once it gets out, it's exponential the way it keeps giving away. How else do people get your email address if you went online, created an email address at Hotmail or, you know, wherever, never gave it to anyone, trusted that the domain you used, the email service you used, really wasn't selling your email address, you know, behind your back. How do they get it? Exactly. All right, exactly.
There's some more new sophisticated methods that you use, particularly if you use Hotmail, or if you use some service which will display HTML in the body of the message. They will have pictures off of their website, and the URL for that will actually have a special unique identifying tag that identifies you, and they can look, once you hit their server, it can look up what your address is in their list, so that, boom, they've just verified that address just simply by looking at the message.
Yeah.
Also, if you forward a piece of spam to some ISPs, you'll notice at the bottom of most messages, they're also put in a little string that's a unique identifier, and if the ISP turns the message over to the spammer saying, oh, you sent it to this person, take them off of your list, they say, aha, there's the valid address.
Yeah, the worst thing you can do with a piece of spam is to hit the link at the bottom that says remove by clicking here, because all you've done is confirm to them that you have a valid working email. For those of you who don't have an alphabet attack or a dictionary attack, you can specify how many letters you can. There are all different ways you can do it. You can tell it to do common last names with random first initials or whatnot. But in the simplest sense, it starts off sending an email to aaaaaa@wellbornlaw.com, then goes to aaaaaab, and just runs through, you know, all the different combinations. And there's software out there and protocols they use, you know, from bounce backs to return send mail protocols, that they can determine which ones did not get bounced back meaning which ones are good email addresses.
While we're on the subject of the HTML that actually grabs your address, is there a browser that or an email program that we can turn on and off HTML so I don't have to look at that and the weird pop-ups and all that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really? I haven't found that, but I'll have to look more.
Yeah, does anybody remember? I always forget and have to play with the options. Is it it's either tools or options?
Under tools, go down to options, and you can, I can't remember exactly what tab it is in it, but you can turn it off where it says, you can tell it don't read HTML, or, and it'll only send your email plain text.
Yeah, well, I'm more concerned about the reading because, one, I get the pop-ups, and two, I know you can get the address that way.
It's under a tab there.
Little, you mentioned pop-ups too. A little plug for my client. Earthlink came out, I think, 2 weeks ago, maybe like within the last month, with their proprietary software that guarantees almost 100% elimination of pop-ups.
I've been using that. It works pretty good.
Good. Really?
Yeah.
So I haven't downloaded it yet because I like to keep my account open to get the spam. Y'all would be shocked at how many times I have received spam from someone who I was actively suing at that moment. Which, you know, you want to talk about something fun to wave at the judge in federal court? One other little war story. Just
what you just said seems to me one of the best things. Drive them out of business, bankrupt them, where they can't even afford a computer or an internet connection anymore. It seems like the most effective way to deal with it.
Yeah, and that's a great point. That's the conversation we're having up here before we started, just a couple of three of us. What's scary about spam and why are you still hearing about spam, more so now than ever? Here's the reason. Technologically speaking, the only analogy I can imagine is, what if every single petty criminal in the country, every single petty bad guy in the country, had a nuclear bomb? You have a weapon of mass destruction that's available to anybody in that case. Technologically speaking, that's the state of spam right now, because if somebody has $800 to buy a computer, $200 to buy a piece of bulk email software, and $100 to buy 10 million email list, of which maybe 2 million work if it's a great list, he can pop out a million emails a day just with that system. So imagine when you get the better computers, the better list, the better software, you get the sophisticated guys with banks and banks of computers running. You have the capacity in the hands of any internet user that wants to do awful, awful, horrible things that can impact even the biggest of the ISPs. And so that's why it's so scary.
It's pretty scary. We got I work in tech, and we got about 20,000 users there, and we'll have spam that goes to entire groups, and they'll mail a 5 meg Word document with one picture, one page of an apartment to 5,000 end users in our department. It's crazy, man. It really does affect us. We got OC48, dude, and almost a quarter of our bandwidth is taken up by Morpheus and spam. All you need to do is take the spam, drag it off. If you have Outlook or something like that, drag the message off on your desktop, double-click on it, open up with Notebook, and go through, look for the received from, take that, paste it in either samspade.org or dnstools.com, and hit do stuff, and they'll tell you who their ISP is, it'll tell you who their name provider is, who they registered their stuff with. You call their ISP, even though I swear it's not legal in Georgia, it's legal in Washington and California, but not Georgia yet. You call their ISP, it's against their acceptable use policy. You get them kicked off. They got to spend money registering a new domain name. That's the battle now.
I'll say it's illegal everywhere. But and that call gets awful expensive when it turns out that it's in China, the server's in China.
You send them an email. You send an email
if they didn't hit an open relay.
What?
You go to internet, you know, you mean there, you can go right to the source and take it from there and go down the level.
And then every email you send, you end up getting bounced back because it was a throwaway account that was used to send it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why you got to look at where it's received from. You got to go to people that are passing spam through their service.
Well, the one thing, what is the one bit of information in every spam that has to be true? What does every piece of spam have in common? Yeah, exactly. Every piece of spam is trying somehow, in some stupid way, to separate you from your money. So there has to be some true bit of information in there. It's gonna have spoofed headers. It's gonna be a fake return, originating address. It's gonna be all kinds of bogus information. It's probably gonna be about a fraudulent scheme. It's gonna be a Ponzi scheme, Viagra, porn, enlarge your penis, you know, whatever. All the ones that we're seeing, the Nigerian deal.
Then you go to the website, then you go to sanspay.org, type it in, click do stuff, and then find out who their ISP is.
But many times, you're absolutely right, and that's the process, part of the process I go through with mine, but the more sophisticated spammers put layer upon layer of bogus information. Unfortunately, when you sign up, you know, if I have my way, and this probably will get some, you know, reaction, you know, this is the right wing in me coming out. I think you should have to give legitimate information when you sign up for a domain. You know, I'm so tired of looking up a domain of a spammer and finding John Doe, 123 Main Street, 555-555-5555 is the phone number. But you're right, and we'll talk about some of the tools in a little bit. There are some tools that will help you try to get to the bottom of where the spam is from. But on the concept of this, there's got to be some way to separate you from your money for the spammer. The fax number, phone number, toll-free number, P.O. box, the greatest spam-fighting site in history, I think, is mailboxes, etc., store locator. Because literally probably 80 or 90% of the time that the spam has a street address, you know, 123 Main Street, you know, send your check to, you know, 123 Main Street, Suite 190, Information Communications National Incorporated. That's a mailboxes, etc. mailbox. And they're good. When you fax them a subpoena, they fax it back to usually the same day. And mailboxes, etc. requires that they take a copy of your driver's license. You know, keep a photocopy of your driver's license as part of the sign-up process for the box. So that's always real fun to make that call or, you know, have that person served.
Another way you could deal with it is to charge a small amount, an email
for a send. No. Are people willing to do that? I mean, is that something we've considered?
No. Well,
not to receive.
Let's tweak that a little bit. Email's free, but if you want to send unsolicited commercial email, then you pay a tax. You pay the ISP, and probably the ISP. You pay the ISP 2 cents per mail, 1 cent per mail. Do what?
What about my mail server? They send it through my email address. It goes through my mail server.
But
they're costing me money on my resources.
No,
I pay for my bandwidth. I pay for my mail server.
But here's the concept. In theory, at least, if the ISP keeps the profits for itself and still keeps its prices jacked, it'll go out of business. Would you agree to receive, say, 5 or 10 advertisements per day, clearly labeled as such, in specific relation to areas that you have pre-checked as areas of your interest, in return for your connectivity being $14 a month instead of $20 a month?
No, I wouldn't. If I didn't sign up for it, I don't want it.
But in your ISP agreement, if I open my ISP that was, you know, gave just as good a serve, I think Earthlink actually was number one with J.D. Power. It came out last week. But if my connectivity, my service was just as good as anybody else's, everybody else was charging $19.95, $21.95, whatever. I was charging, you know, $14, $15. But as part of the sign-up process, you know, part of my terms of service, my AUP that I informed you of, you expressly agreed to receive a set number of advertisements per day, clearly, you know, defined as such. And there was a whole checklist. You could, you know, anything from, you know, personal items to sports to magazines, whatever, you know, it would be targeted.
Still wouldn't agree to it.
Well, you're right. It's not unsolicited, yeah. Then, but you wouldn't. How many of you would?
I
agree to receive a few ads per day if it meant $5 or $10 less per month for connectivity.
All the companies based on that type of model have done our business.
Yes, they have. But a lot of that too, a lot of that was due to their business model. But I think some of that too was because what we're seeing now with the shakeout of the mom and pops, you know, even the smaller ISPs who are not using that business model are falling by the wayside or getting bought out.
If I believed that model would help, if you could promise me that I'd receive those advertisements and none other, yeah, I'd sign up. But as it is, all I'd be signing up for is 5 more ads a day.
I have a web-based email service for which I pay $25 a year, and I get 0 email. Pardon? No, it's another.com. It's out of the UK. And I literally get 0 spam. And it's $25 a year. It's a great deal.
Why it is that you don't get spam? I mean,
no, I don't, because it's the email address I use all the time.
Interesting. Do you know what you're not getting?
You mean if I'm not getting email from friends?
Exactly. Do you know what you're not getting?
I'm not aware of not getting anything.
So like the email from Ed McMahon that told you that you did in fact win the Publishers Clearing House is sitting in England somewhere, maybe?
Probably, yes.
Oh, that's interesting. It's another.com?
Yeah.
I'll have to take a look at them. Cause one of the Sam Curry cases I had. How many people have gotten Benchmark Print Supply spam or Vertex Toner printer cartridge spam?
Oh, geez, is another alias.
Yeah.
Can I ask my question again? Because I'm not sure if anybody quite heard what I was saying. I mean, Office pays something for our internet connectivity. I mean, you pay something. So, I don't send that many emails on a per-day basis. Maybe I send 10 a day or something, especially outside of my company. If I'm talking about personal stuff, it's very near zero. And, with corporate people, the spam has a cost. So if it's just a rule on the internet that any sent email generates a cost from the ISP and that must be paid in advance, then nobody's going to send 1 million because it's not going to make economic sense to do that kind of spamming. It'll disappear. It won't happen anymore.
Well, besides the fact of the backlash against the per email charge, one of the main problems is your theory assumes that spammers will play by the rules. And most of the spammers right now, anyway, most of the career spammers at least, it's bad thing upon bad thing upon bad thing. Not only are they spamming, but they are using stolen credit card accounts to buy their throwaway spamming accounts, and then they are committing what amounts to hacking by bypassing mail servers, hijacking third-party servers to use as relays, doing all kinds of things that add a whole another layer of the criminality to the spam.
Also, the other problem with that would be that the mail protocols don't have any way of knowing whether or not you've paid, and there's no way to force everyone in the world to charge for that. So they'll just move it over to somewhere in China where they don't care.
Yeah, and the day you did that, I'd open up the mail service that didn't charge for them.
Yeah.
That's what I'm credit
for. I think the other important point is that, I think, you're paying to connect to the internet, but you're also paying for the right to receive emails. So, when you do sign up for an ISP, not only are you sending, or you're paying for the right to send emails to your friend, but you're also paying for the right to receive them. Now, that being said, you want to get the best for your money and, not have to receive emails you don't want, but it's like a twofold thing. I don't think people sometimes look at that you are still paying for the right to receive emails as part of your internet connection.
Sure, there is no such thing as prohibited solicited commercial email. If a big ISP could not sue if its users had said, I'm happy with you sending me these advertisements, please send them to me. That's entirely separate. If the user agrees to receive something, then that's that is per se okay. All right, let's talk about the illegality for just a second. As y'all know, a lot of states have spam-specific laws. Washington, Virginia, I think there's 24, 26, something like that, have some version of a spam-specific anti-spam law. These vary from really good ones to some that weren't thought out too well. There have been federal laws in the works now for 5 or 6 years that every year, for whatever reason, they just end up dying in committee. Even the best authored of these, ones with the best intention, have technological loopholes. Just as a for instance, and I could go on all day, one of the better ones included a provision that the spam had to include a valid remove address or reply to address. What it didn't say was how long does that email address have to be valid. Suppose it gets shut down 45 seconds after you sent the email. Well, it was valid when I sent it. I've got no control. A year, does it have to be still good? 6 months? 45 seconds? So those are some of the problems that we see with some of the specific spam laws. But, some are good, some are okay. What those laws do is make it convenient for the layperson who really is a diligent, vehement anti-spam advocate to go to small claims court or to have an easy, understandable, almost fill out the form type, here's the spam, the statute says I get $500 for this violation, the statute says I can sue right here. It makes it a little bit easier, kind of one-stop shopping for the casual legal advocate. But in the typical spamming case, and especially the spamming spoofing case, in the complaint that spoofing is falsifying the disguising or falsifying the originating address. Yeah.
Wouldn't a lot of the spam fall under Commercial Sales Deceptive Practices Act? Almost all 50 states have those, deceptive practices.
Well, a lot of it, that's a great point. Separate and apart from the illegality of the spam itself, even if it were sent to you, where they put a postage stamp on it and mailed it to you, a lot of it is deceptive or fraudulent within its content. But in a typical spamming and spoofing case, here in Georgia, which is where we sue for Earthlink, and actually where we sue for a lot of the other ISPs as well, because the initial lawsuit is almost always a John Doe lawsuit. There are a dozen, I think there are usually 13 separate causes of action, any one of which carries the day and wins that lawsuit against the spammers. And those range from from Federal Computer Crimes Act acts to Communications Privacy Acts, all the way down to what's called state common law trespass law. There's no specific statute. It's judge-made law. Comes down from cases that go all the way back to the English system. The same common law concepts to keep me from walking in your garden make spam illegal, so to speak, at least civilly. And so, here in Georgia, find some wood to knock on. The good guys are undefeated in the spam cases. And that's actually pretty much true nationwide and true for cases that arose before even one state had a specific anti-spam statute.
It's infinite. You can't get away from – it's just like phone calls. Phone calls are supposed to be, if they call you three times or whatever, you can tell them, remove me, remove me, remove me. They don't care. They keep going. And the same thing with spam. It doesn't matter how many times or how illegal it is or – how many people get prosecuted. There's an infinite supply of these losers out there that are going to continue to do it, and you can't adequately filter it, because then they're filtering out. With Earthlink, there's things that I have one particular message that I received that they perpetually take off for me, and I keep saying, no, it's not junk, and it keeps throwing it in there, and it's like, so you can't win. You're removing things that you want because they're trying to protect you, but concierge.com won't leave me alone, even though I have no idea how they got my address and I get it perpetually. So it's like, why? I know they're sending it to a million people too. Why do I not get the thing that I want that probably 500 people got, whereas I get that I'm sure a lot more got?
Yeah, that's the problem with filters. And I will say some of the most current filtering software is coming out with a fairly sophisticated version of the opposite of a blacklist, a whitelist. And so if that email that gets bumped every time is coming from your work domain or coming from somebody, and you can tell it, let these through no matter what. Do not apply my filtering rules to these circumstances. And so that's one way of solving or preventing that. As far as again, your comment, it's really deep when you think about what you said. It's almost like an infinite number of people out there doing it, because what we have is the range from the career spammers, the Allen and Rowskis up in Michigan, who have the banks and banks of computers and who are using sophisticated things like dynamic IP addresses so that the website is down shortly after the spam goes out, makes it harder to track. Other end of the spectrum, you have the retired, not so bright guy who does not understand there's anything wrong with the Ponzi scheme, that, you know, he thinks it's a legitimate way to make some money and nothing wrong with it, and is just not savvy enough to understand the, you know, that spam is an awful thing. You have a lot of people. You have a lot of people in the middle, I'd say, and it's probably, unfortunately, a pretty even distribution. How do we stop that? Well, there are three ways to combat spam. You know, well, actually four if you count bombs and fists and all, which is probably a good idea. But you've got legislative, you know, lawmaking. You've got technological, which we talked about already, and you've got lawsuits. The thing to do, go after the 15, 20, 25, 30 career spammers. That would take a huge chunk out of it. And then make an example of some of the people at this end of the spectrum. One more story, and then we'll go to you. Three weeks ago, we got a $25 million judgment against a spammer in Johnson City, Tennessee, named K.C. Smith. I've talked about the spammers who are really bad guys who are, you know, bad upon bad upon bad. We know of 1,000 stolen credit card numbers he had and used to buy throwaway accounts. He gave away some of these accounts under the guise of his own ISP, nationalisp.cc and archangelemail.com, that offered free internet connectivity with their download. The download, unfortunately, contained Trojan software as well that would send the user's information back, and the free internet connectivity was a stolen Earthlink account, or stolen accounts from other ISPs. But we got a $25 million. It was actually, we were able to show with he and all of his customers who were buying these stolen accounts from him a staggering number of emails. We showed $4 million in actual losses. We trebled that under the federal RICO statutes. The among the cause of action I was talking about, the state RICO racketeering, it's a statute that was originally intended to fight organized crime, but that can also be used in almost any instance involving wire fraud, mail fraud, where the person has committed a pattern of misconduct. But one thing that's neat about those statutes is they allow triple damages, and that's triple before you get into the whole idea of punitive damages. So what I had the court do was take the $4 million in real damage, $4 point something in real damages, treble that under RICO, and then double that as punitive damages, which got us up to $24.8 million. This guy, he said he had backers and threatened my life, which I didn't take him seriously and told him I'd drive to Johnson City, Tennessee and beat his ass if he didn't want to take it back. But,
yeah, but you're not talking about spam. You're talking about fraud.
No, I'm talking about spam. I'm talking about this. The fraud was the icing on the cake. If there were no credit card fraud involved, one of his customers who was this far end of the spectrum, who just kind of got caught up in it, the least culpable spammer you'll ever meet, who didn't steal any credit cards, what he did is over a 2-day period sent 440,000 unsolicited commercial emails through Earthlink system. We're waiting on the paperwork to come back from the court, but we'll have a judgment of about $120,000-$140,000 against him. The spam is indeed prohibited, even in the absence of a state law, by everything from the same laws that prevent or prohibit DOS attacks, all the way down to unjust enrichment laws. And all these are some are criminal and civil causes of action. Some are just civil causes of action, but they are dead winners every time. I mean, I've got a notebook of spam cases back at the office, and the good guys win every time. You know, even where it's just run-of-the-mill spamming, because what it is a theft of computer services.
But could someone just, John Q. Public go down to Mall Claims Court? Like, they have that fax law where, you can get $500 for receiving unsolicited faxes?
Yeah, the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. Right. If you get any junk faxes or you get any telemarketing calls that are initiated by a recorded are a recorded message, this is the whatever travel service. You've won a free vacation. Press 9 to be connected to a live person. That's $500 a pop. You can sue them in your own home county, and if you can show they've received complaints about it before, which they all have, that 500 goes to 1500. Well, it's not. The difference is this. Imagine what your front yard would look like if every commercial retailer had franking privileges. You know, could send stuff free through the U.S. mail. What would your front yard look like?
So you're saying that you pay for it
completely? Yeah, exactly. But and the reason is...
Well, if you just agreed earlier, that now it's fine to go up, but didn't want to pay for it. Well...
Well, I think you can have it both ways. Theoretically, if you only had to pay for the commercial email. I mean, the beautiful thing about the internet is that to analogize to the snail mail, for our personal communications, you know, or actually for all of them right now, we in one way of thinking do have franking privileges. We actually do pay for the emails that we send out and receive because we're paying a fixed fee per month for the connectivity. And you know, accountants would tell you that you have to apportion some of that cost per month, some of your $20 per month, to that function of sending and receiving emails. But if you look at that as a fixed fee, then yeah, we can send and receive free. And that's one thing that really makes the internet neat, that you know, you don't have to pay every time you communicate. It's broken down geographic barriers, it's broken down socioeconomic barriers in a lot of ways. So, you know, let's do get the best of both worlds. Let's charge for commercial email. By doing that, that would drive 99.9% of the spammers out of business because they would have to pay for what they're sending. The whole reason we have spammers right now is because they can send out their emails for free. It's like a collect call that you have no ability to refuse.
How do you stop them? Like, how do you designate what is commercial and what is, you know, me sending a letter to kind of my friends and me saying that I moved? Like, how do you...
Well, are you trying... Are you trying... What the...
How would you stop them? I mean, how is it... The people who are dishonest aren't going to offer up their $1 million to send an email. So.
Right. The people who are honest, if it's priced too much, they'll get out of it. The way to stop it is to continue to make examples. I think, among other ways, is to continue to make examples out of some of the bad guys. The Casey Smith judgment, by the way, the $25 million deal, the judge signed our proposed order, which was about 20 pages long, as written, and that included about three-fourths of a page, you know, a whole long paragraph explaining that it was the express intent of the federal court here in Atlanta that that judgment would under no circumstances be dischargeable in bankruptcy. So what that means is for the rest of this guy's life, you know, whether he's making, you know.
Couldn't he still file a check for 13 and just pay a percentage?
Unless a bankruptcy court just totally ignored the findings of fact, which is not going to happen, we're going to be garnishing this guy's wages. He's fled from Johnson City now, but.
That's the problem with judgments. You still have to collect.
And we are too. Just to give you an idea of the. How hard we're chasing this guy and the lengths we're going to. I subpoenaed his high school and middle school records to make sure I had proper contact information. I got his social security number, got all kinds of information on his parents, Monty and Debbie Smith. And so, you can't hide. I hope to get an order back this week that will allow us free reign with all the information that's been collected on him by all the credit reporting agencies. One less spammer in the U.S. at least, but that would make it a whole lot more difficult. But you know, how many spammers are actually going to flee the country?
How many? 25 million
judgment. Well, yeah, and if we get, maybe we can get rid of them one at a time. Then, yeah. Okay.
Okay. So, you're proposing a situation in which you charge for commercial email. Now, from a legal sense, I can see how this is justifiable. You can make a case for it. You can say you expect to enter into some kind of business transaction, and this is a form of advertisement. But from a technological sense, I can't begin to imagine a way of implementing the infrastructure in a way that doesn't cause much worse problems for everyone involved in the level of just the level of government involvement in everyone's network that would be necessary. The way the mail protocols work right now wouldn't work with this. And how would you propose setting up a mail system where this proposed solution is even possible?
Well, are we talking about a tax, or are we talking about an ISP-imposed price?
Regardless.
Well, either way, I mean, if it's an ISP imposed price, it'd be easy enough for the ISP to validate or to send on behalf of its sender customers to its user customers who had agreed to receive that. That could actually be sent at the ISP level, so it actually would be on that level fairly easy to implement. But the problem is, and some of this goes down to, how do you believe the spectrum that we talked about with the people who have no idea they're doing wrong at this end versus the KC Smiths of the world and the Sam Currys of the world at that end? What is the distribution along that sliding scale of the spammers? Right, that's exactly the point I was getting at. If you had laws like that, if you educate these people, there's some portion of spammers, some percentage of spammers that are going to say, oh, I'm an honest person. I didn't know I was doing wrong. I'll stop this. I'm going to pay because, you know, here it is. I can't afford to pay. I'll stop sending. You're right. These guys are going to ignore any, they're going to get around any technological fix. They're going to ignore any laws that are passed about how they're supposed to be sending the email, so that the only way to get them is to take their money, take their houses, take their cars, and put them in jail. Yeah.
So whose laws do actually apply? The laws in the country where the email is sent or where the email is received? Because I'm getting a lot of spam from like China, Korea, countries like that.
That is a wonderful question. I have a law student from Europe. A woman from Sweden who's going to be interning at my firm for the next 3 months. She gets here next week. And that's she has to do a thesis paper while she's here, and her paper is going to be on the jurisdictional issues with spam. And that's, you know, it's not even just spam. I mean, there's so many jurisdictional questions that the Internet brings up. If you can show naked pictures of 16-year-old girls in Holland, but the age is 18 here in the States, what happens when someone in the States subscribes to the service in Holland? Has he violated the law? Has the company in Holland violated the law? With gambling, for instance, one of the few cases has actually gone to trial on that. U.S. citizen went to Antigua, set up one of the gambling sites, marketed to and catered to the U.S. population. The site was approved by the Antiguan government. He paid his fee to set the company up because it was totally legal in Antigua. He was charged under various gambling statutes here in the States. He wanted to be able to come back to the States and, you know, come and go as he wanted to, so he returned from Antigua to fight those charges and ended up with a loss and in jail. And needless to say, his two partners decided not to come back from Antigua after that. Yeah.
Let me just make sure I understand what you're saying. You're saying that as far as the state of Georgia is concerned, unsolicited commercial email is illegal. Is that correct?
We'll define illegal. It is 100% of the time a winning civil action.
So if I, theoretically now, if I have a home business and I send out 100 emails advertising my home business and they're not to people who requested these emails, I have just broken the law in Georgia. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
I mean, you might have, you know, you could have a DMA, Direct Marketing Association. Somebody might come in here and argue otherwise, but, you know, I'm telling you that's the case that we win every time we file it in the exact situation you just described.
Yeah, I'd like to just argue that I think a lot of the people who are trying to legitimately do like opt-in list and send email out that way already are paying for that, because there is a level of managed service that goes with that, because you want to make it easy for people to unsubscribe. So I think the people who are legitimately doing it already do pay for that service. The idea is that it's a lot more cost-effective than sending it out through the mail and doing the printing, but you do, you know, pay some small fee for it. It's, as you said earlier, it's the people who are doing it illegally are the people who are not really paying for it, because they don't care about unsubscribes. You know, they don't care about trying to get a legitimate opt-in list from people, which usually requires like signing up at the store or something like that.
Adam, my it makes me cringe almost every time you say legitimate opt-in list, because my brain is screaming oxymoron, well, right, you know, jumbo shrimp, military intelligence, legitimate opt-in. But I hear what you're saying, and what I'm talking about is this, that the one of the newest tricks of spammers, if I want to spam for, you know, my Viagra website, what I'll do is set that site up, on the site, set it up as, you know, give lip service to the idea that all the marketing for my site is done through affiliates. Then I'll set a bogus, I'll create a bogus, fictitious straw person over here. He'll be affiliate number 654. All the spam that goes out for my website will, in the link, you know, back to my site, it'll have the link, and you've all seen it, ID or AFF or whatever equals 654 or 123 or whatever. So when someone comes and complains to me, I'll show them my terms of service that clearly prohibit any of my affiliates, any of my independent contractor salespeople from sending spam in any way. I'll say how sorry I am. I'll promise to immediately terminate affiliate number 654, and I've just gotten away with the spamming with impunity by blaming some fictitious person over here. I mean, that's one of many little scams or tricks that the spammers will use to try to deflate. You know, it's like the Shaggy song, It Wasn't Me. Yeah. You know, I saw you in the window. No, it wasn't me. I saw you. It wasn't me. It's the same thing. Spammers will look you right in the eye, and it wasn't me. You'll have checking account records, ISP records, their hosting company records. It wasn't me. It was the affiliate. You know, I didn't do it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But commenting on what he was saying about legitimate home business use, it will never be acceptable for a home business to send me anything I didn't ask for, I didn't explicitly sign up for, even if they have the best of intentions, because, well, if 6 million home businesses decide that they want to wash my dog, I can no longer read my email.
When I say legitimate, I mean that, you know, like if you like Apple computers and you send to Apple and say, I want to receive the Apple newsletter.
There's lists that are generated from sign-ups.
Yeah, from sign-ups. I mean, that's what I mean when I say legitimate. Not ones where they bought. Yeah, not ones where they bought and they sent it to you and it was up to you then to remove yourself. There are a number of companies who do try and grow their lists, and they ask people for it, and people do sign up for it because they want to hear for it. And that's what I mean when I say legitimate. These are people who are paying for it because, you know, that takes some investment in gathering that capital.
Although, how many of you have ever seen this message? The box, you're signing up for whatever, and the box is already checked, and it says, yes, I would like to receive, say you're buying from the ABC company. Yes, I would like to receive additional communications from ABC company and its partners regarding offers that I might be interested in. Never, ever, ever leave that box checked, because y'all know what "and our partners" means, right? Anybody who will buy that list from them. And that's another trick of the spammers now, too, is you'll see the message at the bottom, which is totally bogus. You received this message because you agreed to receive this email in signing up with one of our partner sites, which is just made up. You know, instead of complaining, you spend 15 minutes thinking, well, you know, I wonder, was that Amazon, or was that when I bought the stereo from Crazy Eddie up in New York, or was that this or that? So there are all kinds of lies that the spammers put in the emails to throw you off the track. Any other questions, comments, thoughts?
What is the status with Sam Curry? What's happened to him?
Sam Curry, y'all heard the phrase labor of love? Right, well, Sam Curry is my labor of hate. I've got two orders against him that prohibit him from spamming, spoofing, sending any emails without going through my clients to get notifying our clients of it and letting us agree that it's opt-in. The whole laundry list of the prohibited conduct. By the way, the one good thing that we're trying to do and that Earthlink is trying to do, when a case is resolved, if you read about other large ISPs in the country, when a case gets resolved, it'll say that ISP obtained a court order prohibiting the bad guy from doing bad things against that ISP. And so that leaves the spammer free to move on to a smaller, less able to spend $1 billion defending itself, to continue on with the bad acts and just, you know, leaving that ISP out of it. What we do, every case that we've resolved spam-wise, which has been a number of them, a lot of them, since 98, has included not just a provision that says you've got to leave the plaintiff alone, but the provision says you cannot spam, spoof, do anything on this list of prohibited acts against anybody on the Internet. And what's more, there's a contract doctrine called third-party beneficiary, which gives you rights under a contract even if you were not a party to the contract. Same thing, if I have a contract with my insurance company and make one of y'all the beneficiary, if I die and they don't pay you, you can sue them even though you were not a party to the contract. What the settlement, what the consent order rather says, or the order that's imposed involuntarily by the court against the bad guy, depending on how the case gets, you know, ends up, that order says every domain owner, email address owner, and ISP in the world is an express third-party beneficiary of this agreement. Any one of those people or entities has the right to sue for contract damages under this agreement, and then we set hellacious liquidated damages. And what's more, we throw in a paragraph that says, in the event any action is brought under this agreement, the applicable burden shall not be preponderance of the evidence, which is what it is in civil matters, which means if you put the evidence on a scale here and the for and the evidence against on the scale over here, whichever way it tips, 51% beats 49%. But you gotta have at least 50%. You gotta, you know, have more than the other side. Instead, we add a paragraph in that says the any evidence rule shall apply. If the plaintiff produces any evidence of a violation, that's sufficient to prove a violation of that agreement, of the contract terms of that agreement. And so it shuts them down. Have y'all ever heard of Ron Millette? Anybody? He was one of the most notorious spammers in the country. A lot of Viagra ads and whatnot. He was also in rural Tennessee, not too far from Johnson City, and in fact at one time was affiliated with Casey Smith. We shut him down Christmas 2 years ago, and he had to sign one of the consent orders, and the judge made clear the order specifically states that violation shall be grounds for criminal contempt, which means they can go to jail for it. And going back to the question about Sam Curry, he spammed me about 3 weeks ago. I'm sure a bot had grabbed my work email address, pete@wellbornlaw, off of, you know, wherever, you know, came to a site, grabbed it, and wherever he got it, spammed me. And so now I'm getting ready to file Paul F. Wellborn III versus Sam Curry. I'm going to put in evidence of that. I've got the news group postings of and personal communications of thousands of other complaints. I'm going to have a recording of his email remove line, which in his voice on his 800 number is saying, you know, if you want to be removed from my email list, here's what you have to do. I've subpoenaed records from Bell South to prove to the court, you know, what we already know, which is that he owns these phone numbers. And so we're going to catch him coming and going, and hopefully, you know, as every newscaster who's telling a jail story says, you know, on the little 7 a.m. news show, you know, Sam Curry is waking up in jail this morning. So, you know, y'all, hopefully y'all will be seeing something before too very long about Sam Curry waking up in jail.
That's my question, is why aren't we seeing that? Why aren't we seeing your $25 million case being reported in the Wall Street Journal?
Well, they did have that case recently about the blast facts being sued for $70 trillion of dollars.
Yeah. A lot of that depends on the corporate communications department and the marketing people at the ISP. Different ISPs take different thoughts and theories. Some are very anxious to publicize victories like that. Others are concerned that the victory itself points out the fact there is a spam problem, and you know they believe that if nobody reads that we won against spam, nobody will think we have spam. So, you know, to the extent that a lot of these things are not publicized like a lot of us wish they were, that's a decision made at the corporate level as far as how they want to market their services.
Wouldn't that go a long way to be, as you say, making an example of these people?
I think it would. I mean, when
let's face it, everybody watched the guys from Enron and the guys from that other company as they were hauled, as they were carried out of the courthouse in New York City in handcuffs.
Yeah, I
on national television.
You are preaching to the choir. When I was the lead attorney for Earthlink against Sanford Wallace and Cyber Promotions, who back as of the 96-97 time frame was the most prolific spammer. He, in a lot of ways, he didn't invent spam, originate it. That was an attorney, you know, funny enough, out in Arizona. But he was kind of the daddy or granddaddy of spamming as its own industry. When we shut him down I think that case finally ended in the spring of 98, that was front page Wall Street Journal. That was everything from Wall Street Journal to GQ. And there was a significant drop that brought spam to everyone's attention, the illegality of it. And the fact that, if you did it, you get caught. Yeah,
real quick question. I just wanted to feel you out about the IP number in relation to spam emails. With the advent of a new IP technology that's supposed to be giving us hundreds of millions of more IPs, does your industry foresee a huge jump in the number of spam because these guys use the IP as such an integral part of the spam, to further hide themselves or...
Yeah, I think that's one of a thousand different technological issues that we could discuss. That's why, like I said earlier, there will never be a technological fix, because that's always going to be a game of one-upsmanship. We started off and got a little sidetracked talking about the early filters, looked for keywords in the subject line. Then the bad guys figured out a way to get around that. Now you've got super sophisticated filtering program like Brightmail. There's several new really, really good products. CipherTrust is a good one, that have all different, many different technological aspects to them that look at different technological subjects or issues all together with the spam to decide whether to block it or let it through. But I'm here to tell you that as once that starts making a dent, the bad guys will figure another way to get around that. And it's always going to be a game of technological one-upsmanship. So, that might give the good guys or the bad guys, depending on which day it is, an upper hand in that back and forth war.
On all of their mail accounts where all of the boxes were checked and there was no notification that they did it.
For existing users.
Really?
They subscribe all of the... They created a new subscription list for all Yahoo mail account users.
Everyone was by default opted in.
With no notification?
With no notification
at
all. A notification that they were going to do it, but it was up to you to go into your tools and go through the menus and unsubscribe.
I guess theoretically, to me that's awful marketing. It's all about money. I guess they must have got a ton of money to do that. But I'm sure that if you read the Yahoo Terms of Service, actually a lot of y'all would be horrified if you actually sat down and read the Terms of Service for your ISP, but I'm sure Yahoo's Terms of Service gave them the right to do that, and especially it's most changes to terms of service and even privacy policies, many are done without notice because the fine print of the AUP or terms of service or privacy policy will say the ISP reserves the right to change this at any time without notice, and it's the policy in effect at the time of your login will apply. The burden is on you to acquaint yourself with the terms and to make yourself aware of any changes. So it's basically saying you got to read the terms of service like a lawyer every time you go on the system. For dramatic changes and especially for privacy changes, you'll get an email like that. So it was a pretty extraordinary thing for Yahoo even to send out an email saying, hey, we've done this, undo it if you want to.
Well, it was interesting because I had at the time several Yahoo accounts just for various throwaway identities. The mails did not come at the same time. They were days and even weeks apart. And the first I heard about it was not from Yahoo, but from somebody who posted a message on a place where I frequent saying, look, Yahoo is doing this. You guys all need to go and, change your preferences.
And that's how I got three or four not knowing where they were from. And someone else emailed me saying, hey, yeah, we did this.
Well, so to me, it's all about money. The bottom line is, if it's a business, people in it for money, and so that's going to drive a lot of decisions. But you really have to be careful not to alienate your customers. And I would be willing to bet you, if I had a Yahoo account and they did that, I would say screw you. I would mount the biggest campaign I could to, I'd be calling editors, newspapers. I'd make sure that Yahoo got so much bad publicity, whether via the mass media or whether one user at a time. But at the very least, they would not get my business.
I think that's the one good point you have to remember is that Yahoo Mail is a free service. So, Well, I mean, for a lot of people it is. They'll sign up for a free Yahoo thing or for a free Hotmail thing. So I think that's probably the one warning for a lot of people. When you are using free services, you just have to remember that they're going to have to find a way to pay for it, and chances are that's going to be advertising. So, you know, now it's different for the people paying for Yahoo, but that's one of the things. Anytime you sign up for something for free and you give your email address or something else, and you know, be careful to read those terms of agreements, because chances are, you know, they're going to be selling the right to advertise to you to pay for those free services.
Yeah, and that's actually a good point in general, probably a good one to close with. How many of you go to websites and some of the ones that are more on the extreme end of things will actually have a pop-up box of the terms of service, and you have to scroll down to the I agree button?
Yeah.
Has anybody ever read any of that?
Yeah.
If the few that say, yeah, I mean, and I'm bad about it sometimes too. If I'm in a hurry, you click I agree. And every time I do, you know, I think, God, I hope I just didn't agree to, sell my firstborn child or, you know, $1,000 a minute connectivity or something like that. Which, by the way, everybody's laughing. It's one of the phone scams going back around now. It's the number in, does anybody know what the area code is? I got an email.
It's like 804.
Yeah.
Down in the Bahamas.
Yeah, in the Bahamas. It's it's depending on which email you believe, it's 25 a minute or on up for some of the other prefixes down there. But and this is legit. This is not a hoax, because that's my pet peeve at my old law firms, was when the idiot 65-year-old partners would, you know, send out the circulate the email, we should boycott Oprah's show because of what Tommy Hilfiger said. You know, I would blast those people, you know, send them a link to urbanlegends.com, you know, the hoax part of that site. But this is legit, and you get a voicemail message on your answer machine saying, you know, a family member's been arrested, you need to call this number to, you know, inquire about it. Or there's one version going around now that's, I don't think it's that, it's a Middle Eastern prefix, maybe it's one of those prefixes, it's an American dial number, but it says dial this number, and it's either Antigua or Bahamas, one of those, but it's dial this number for important information regarding a recent terrorist attack, you know, or an ongoing terrorist attack in your area. So people, you know, any way to get you to call, and then you get your phone bill, and you can bill it $25 a minute, and you have to dispute the charges, and that's an awful pain. So be aware of that. Any other questions? I think I'm about at the end of the time. We've got another group coming in. I really enjoyed it. Thank y'all. Y'all are a great group, very active. I appreciate it.